The Right to Question is supported in part by the Paul Allen Family Foundation, by Humanities Montana, and by listeners like you.
What sort of person was your great aunt Florence?
She was the matriarch of our family, and her house was one of the most important gathering places. So everybody was there at some point during the day. She might have 100 visitors, literally. And if she didn't, and I was over there, she'd say, "Hardly anybody came to see me today." She was the kind of person that loved everybody, regardless of whether they had a PhD, were a high school dropout, unemployed. She really loved everybody in a unique and remarkable way that had to do with them being family and a human being more than what they did, how much money they made, you know, who they were to the rest of the world. And so her heart was very, very large. And I think that's why everybody was always at Florence's house. If you wanted to see family, that's where you go.
Welcome to The Right Question, a program that features authors from the Western U.S. I'm Cherie Newman, talking with Julie Cajun, an American Indian storyteller and actress, about her one-woman play titled Belief. Florence's story became the backbone of this play.
Right.
But I know it didn't start out that way. So explain where the idea for this play came from.
Well, you know, we had done the CD called Heart of the Bitterroot, and that was looking at the stories of women from the past, Salish and Pend'oreille women. And I did the historic research about these women. Then I gave that research to Jennifer Finley and asked her if she could make a story about each woman that would be entertaining to listen to as spoken word. And so Jennifer did that. So I thought, well, we'll take these women's stories, and then there are these other remarkable women, Sophie Moise, Sack Woman, Marianne Pierre Combs. I was thinking of all these remarkable women that people don't know about. And so we decided to meet, and I had some material, and I brought it and started talking about all these women. And I met with Linda Grindy, who is going to be our director, and then Jennifer Finley, who I thought would do this writing of these stories, and that collectively we would craft a play out of these women's lives. So we sat and met and started talking about it. And early on, Linda and Jennifer were a bit resistant to, I guess, my idea of this is what it's going to be. And not in a negative way, but they were saying, well, let's wait and keep talking and let something evolve. And that was a little bit uncomfortable for me because my time was pretty obligated. And so the idea of letting something creatively evolve was kind of annoying, to be frank. And I think that they could tell that I was almost mad. I felt annoyed and frustrated. And I thought, maybe they have the luxury of time in their creative work to do this, but I don't. I have deadlines and goals, and that's what I was thinking. But I tried to put that aside, and I thought, well, they know more about this kind of creative work than I do. They're the experts. I'm really not, because I don't do creative writing. So we started talking about what did I want people to get out of it. And I said, well, I want people to see Indian women in a different way than media has presented them, as mothers, as grandmothers, as lovers, as healers, as all these different things that most people don't think of when they think of Indian women. And so as we talked, and I talk about some of these women, I'd say, oh, that reminds me of this story. And so it would be my great aunt Florence story, or it would be a story about my family when I was growing up and something that the women in my family did. And so through a month or two of meetings, I did a lot of storytelling, which we do when we get together. You know, that's what people do. And sometimes Linda would say, oh, I think you should write that story down. And I was annoyed again. And I thought, well, that's why Jennifer is here. And Jennifer is like, no, I agree. And I said, I don't think people want to listen to my family stories. And they said, well, just humor us and write that one down. So I ended up writing a lot of family memoir. And it was probably serendipitous because I sat with my mother after and I'd say, this is how I remember this as a six-year-old. Is that what really happened? And she would fill in details or add something or say it was a little bit different. And so we ended up having these really great conversations about my great aunt. I learned things about her that I hadn't known and details of my childhood. And so we had these great conversations. And the play was finished in the fall. It premiered in December. And then I lost my mother in January. And so if they hadn't done that, I wouldn't have had that opportunity to have all those conversations with my mom about the remarkable women in our own family. And so when we got to the end of this, we just put all these stories out on the table, literally. And Linda decided which ones she would pick that would make a play. She said, you kind of want to go up and build up to a climactic point and then bring people to this resolution. So I trusted her to do that. It was a little difficult to be trusting, but she's very talented. And then Jennifer wrote some original poetry that matched the things that we talked about. She took kind of the essence of our conversations about life experiences, you know, from a woman's point of view and from our community's point of view. So some of it is culturally embedded and some of it's very gender focused. And then she wrote these pieces that kind of summarize things that were embedded in the stories. And at our last gathering, when we had all the stories determined, we looked at each other and I said, I feel like we've been through ceremony together. I mean, that's how it felt like to me. You know, of course, I was writing memory, you know, family memory and collective memory of my family. But we all had that feeling that we had gone through something very powerful and spiritual. And so I'm forever grateful that they pulled me along out of this very rigid way of working into doing something where maybe you leave something for the spirit to move. I had not intended to write any family stories. And there is a story in there, a love story, that I certainly hadn't intended to write. But during this whole process, I ended up writing this story about this experience that happened to me. And I was talking to them about it. And I said, I just felt like I had to write about it. Sometimes, don't you feel that way? That mm-hmm. if you write about something, it becomes more clear?
Yes.
And so I did that. And they said, oh, bring it and read it to us. So I brought it the next time we met and read it to them. And they said, that is going to go in the play. And so it was interesting how they chose things.
And now you know what it's like to have that creative force moving through
right.
you and to wait.
Yes. The other thing about writing your own stories is that it makes you feel very vulnerable. And so while it was wonderful, it was also a little bit frightening because you really expose yourself in a very public way.
Yes. And especially now that you're out performing the play. In Belief, you talk about a Salish tradition in which the girl's parents mm-hmm. would choose an older woman from the community to help her make a transition mm-hmm. from girl to woman. But even though the tradition was pretty much gone by the time you were a girl, Florence turned out to be somewhat of a mentor for you. And I'd like you to just read one of the pieces that you wrote. It's called Florence Number Two.
Okay.
At least on my pages.
Yeah,
that's what
we ended up calling it. Florence's best magic was her food. She spent her lifetime feeding people for money at her lunch counter, the old Mint Cafe in Ronan, and for love at her home. People would eat anything and everything that Florence cooked. It didn't matter if it was suited to their palates. She put enough goodness in it to please any appetite. I often watched with amazement as kids would eat beets at her kitchen table. Beets? Who even cooks beets anymore? Florence believed that feeding people was one way of taking care of the world. Her belief and her magic brought a steady stream of people into her kitchen every day just about lunchtime. Young and old, broke or flush, professional or unemployed. But we were drawn to Florence's for her other magic, too. She was the kind of person that when you were in her company, everything just felt right with the world. No matter your troubles, her presence would somehow set your mind to rest. She seemed to have a story that was the right kind of advice for your predicament. Maybe that was because she had experienced so many things. When I was 16, I was working as a fire lookout for the tribes. I was down from the mountain for a few days to get supplies and take a bath. Well, I went to visit Florence and talk to her about my first few weeks of work. She was pretty excited about me working as a fire lookout and staying up on the mountain all alone. Well, I told her about the few fires I'd spotted and how I realized I had a lot to learn about reservation geography. She took a particular interest in my story of the black bear and her cubs that had become my regular evening visitors. The lookout I was stationed on was built on ground level. It was an old structure built up on a rocky pinnacle, and it had a catwalk that went all the way around it. The windows started from about a foot up off the floor. When the air began to cool in the evening, that mother bear would make her way to my two water cans right down below the lookout. And by nightfall, she'd be nosing around the catwalk. Sometimes I'd be laying in my cot at night, and I could see her looking in the window, sitting on her back legs, rocking back and forth. Well, at first I didn't think too much about it, but when her cubs started to follow her, I began to get a little bit more anxious. While I was talking about this, Florence was listening intently. When I finished, she said, "You have to talk Indian to that bear and let her know you're a woman." She told me what to say in Salish and then added, "I had to move my dress from side to side and show that bear I was a woman." Well, Florence almost always wore a dress. I rarely ever saw her wear pants. When I told her I didn't wear a dress or skirt up on lookout, she said, "Well, then, bring an apron." So what did I do? I brought an apron up to lookout. That evening when the bear came around, I stood out on the catwalk and I did exactly as Florence had instructed me. The sun was still up, and looking down on that bear, it was as if there was a diamond on the end of each of her hairs. Her fur just sparkled. Well, we looked at each other, and I told her I was a woman, Janessa Mem. And I told her I was a friend, Chinesi Salacht. And then I moved that apron from side to side, just as Florence had described. What happened then? Nothing. That bear just ambled along below the lookout like she always did. But for the rest of the summer, that bear shared her mountain with me.
I love that there wasn't some huge miraculous thing that happened, because it's just like would happen to any of us.
It would. And there were bears, so many bears up around Ferry Basin that they actually had to build that lookout up high off the ground. So there were a few people after me that stayed in it when it was on ground level. But Florence was so serious, you know, when she told me this, tell that bear you're a woman. Very matter-of-factly, this is what you need to do, talk Indian. And then the whole thing with the dress and the apron. I got an apron from Mom, and when I went up there, you know, you're up on top of the mountain all by yourself. I stood out there, but I kind of looked around like, is anybody looking? Is anybody watching me?
You're listening to The Right Question. I'm Cherie Newman talking with American Indian storyteller and actress Julie Cajun about her one-woman play titled Belief. If you tuned in late, you can hear what you missed at our blog, which you'll find at mtpr.org/twq. We'll be back to talk more about the stories in the play and hear a poem by Julie's co-writer Jennifer Finley right after a short break. Don't go away. As an Indian person, mm-hmm. you probably know more than some of us do about the traditions of mm-hmm. oral storytelling. Mm-hmm. Some of that still happens in your ceremonies and your families?
People still tell coyote stories. It doesn't happen how it used to, you know, where everybody did. And there were songs that went with a lot of our stories, and most of those are lost now. But people were very animated storytellers and very dramatic. And if you've ever been to an elders meeting or around elders, they are very dramatic in their oratory. And so for me, theater is a natural extension of that. And it's a different way to involve people with the stories you're telling. If you read these stories, they might be, you know, maybe interesting to you on a certain level, but it's very different to sit and listen to someone tell them to you. And so theater has a different magic, because even though the audience isn't participating directly with you, in a way they are. Because that's what storytelling is. It can't just be the storyteller. It's the audience that you're telling the story to. And so between the audience and the storyteller or the actor, something happens.
I experienced that here now, because mm-hmm. you had sent me some Word documents mm-hmm. with some of these stories in them. But I have to say that when you started reading that story about Florence and the bear, mm-hmm. it was a whole different experience.
It is. And then the music adds something also. So there is music, and sometimes there's wind and there's lighting. And with theater, you're creating illusion of different things. So you're creating different feelings. So there's a tragic story that I didn't want to write that Linda told me I had to write. And it was really hard for me. And I don't give specific details, but I talk about the time in my life of losing belief, things in my life that chipped away at my belief, because I think young children have deep belief in love, in the world, in each other, in life. The world is full of possibilities to a four-year-old. And then as you go through life, things happen to make you think, well, maybe not. And so she said, you really have to tell that dark side. And I didn't want to, but I did. And it was the hardest piece for me to write. And so I tried to write it without, you know, totally bearing my soul. But enough is said so that people should understand what happened to me. But then it goes on, because then I call my little girl spirit back.
Overall, in the big picture of going through this whole process of writing down these stories and now performing this one-person play, what do you think was the biggest thing that you learned about yourself through thinking about who Florence was?
I think the biggest lesson was about courage, I guess Florence's courage, because of the loss that she went through. And there is a Florence story that's very sad that tells about her loss. And I didn't know how great that was until I talked to my mother about all of the details. And then when I found out all of the details, I cried and I thought, you know, Florence didn't tell me all of those pieces. But she had such a willingness to be in the present time with you and to be loving and generous. So she had this capacity of her heart. I don't think you have that naturally. I think you choose that. I think we start out with it. But then I think as we go through life, we have to choose it.
Right, because as you said, when we're children, we're really open. And then we get knocked around a little bit and we tighten up.
Yes.
And we have to remember as adults to expand our heart to include other people.
Yes, and to remain open to things that life might bring, and to even be open to being more aware of what's happening. Because some of the things that I talked about in telling stories with Jennifer and Linda, I realized, you know, a couple of things were very spiritual things, but there's no mystery and there's no, there wasn't any ominous.
The bear didn't speak to you.
No, the bear didn't talk to me. She just looked up at me like, what are you doing? That if we are open, there's a whole world, I believe, that exists that is invisible. And that invisible world is the most important world. And that's where love exists, courage, belief, compassion. That is where all of those things exist. But we have to be open to see it and experience it. And it reminded me that my mother was that way, that Florence was that way, that my grandma was that way, that my great-grandma. And sometimes if I'm particularly nervous at a performance, I think about all of those women that really they're all with me. And that makes me feel brave.
Well, let's end with a poem that Jennifer Finley wrote.
Okay, I love this.
This is part of your performance. And is it at the end?
This is the end. And Jennifer is, she's a wonderful human being, but she's a very gifted writer. And she's been doing a lot of writing lately. And I know she has another collection of poems. And I think it's her best work. It's so powerful. She's just in, I don't know, a state of powerful grace right now, all of her writing. And so I was really blessed that she agreed to do these. So this is Every Good Story. Every good story that flies into my heart reminds me of what I really know. I hope all the stories I shared with you remind you of what you already know. I pray each of these stories is like a bluebird or a purple flower or some other piece of beauty that flies across your path when you least expect it. I pray each of these stories reminds you that your voice is meant to be loved. Today, be a rainstorm of dances. Sing your way back to yourself. Your spirit is here right now. There's always more to life than you know. Every part of me that loves to laugh, sing, and dance is here right now. And I am strong because I accept my strength like the earth accepts rain. Today, the blessings run like rivers through all of us. I'm sorry for all the times your heart's been broken, but your heart still believes in love, even if you don't. Your heart still needs love as much as it always has. If I could hold each of you, I would. Sometimes you must find a way to see your own goodness because that's what holds you. Your heart is braver than you know. No matter what we have not done or did not say, there is hope for us, all of us. We must stop defining ourselves by who did not love us. Do not let people who don't love you decide how much you're worth. Do not let the people who think you're invisible decide which parts of yourself you see. Step into the light, no matter how much darkness there's been. You have always been worth fighting for. You have always been worth standing up for. You have always been worth dancing for. You have always been worth singing for. Today, start singing back your beauty. Get up and dance for yourself. Dance for all that is good. Dance for who you really are. Because you're still here. And I believe in all of you. I believe in all of us. The real you is still here. Your spirit has always been faithful to you. Your spirit is still by your side, waiting for you to ask it to dance.
Julie Cajun is a member of the Confederated Salish and Kootenai Tribes of Montana. Look for more information about her and the play Belief, as well as links to our podcast and Facebook page at mtpr.org/twq. I'm Cherie Newman, wishing you a pile of fascinating books and lots of questions.
The Right Question is produced by Cherie Newman, with help from Barbara Thoreau and Kim Anderson. Michael Marsalek, executive producer. Beth Ann Austin, studio engineer. Music for this program was written and performed by John Floridis. The Right Question has a Facebook page, a blog, and a podcast. You'll find links to all that at mtpr.org/twq. Thanks for listening and for supporting this program.